The patient might still have a heartbeat. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you, Barry, discussing these very important issues.
Well, Chuck, these are very important issues, and what we're hoping to do is with this program and with all we do in the Institute, including the Institute on the Constitution classes, is to help people clearly see what's going on around them, why it's wrong, why it's out of kilter from the way our founders intended this country to be, and means of taking our own personal responsibility toward getting back to sanity. Now, sometimes we get a little assistance in that because every once in a while, just like a blind pig finding an acorn, usually some way at the federal level or the courts stumble across something to help preserve our constitutional form of government. As we've talked before, one of the articles that we put into IOTC is one by Joe Sobrand that says that our current form of government has nothing to fear from our Constitution because, you know, and it doesn't impinge it in any way. Well, that isn't exactly what occurred here recently when U.S. District Judge Susan Ilston issued a ruling against the Federal Bureau of Investigation. You see, what happened was a lawsuit was filed in 2011 from a group called the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who filed on behalf of an unnamed telecommunications company. So in other words, one of the phone or internet providers who really didn't want their name out there because they were afraid of retribution. So they filed through a third party to basically say that it's illegal, unconstitutional, a violation of the First Amendment for the FBI to issue a letter to these phone companies, telecommunication companies, and of course with banks and other businesses, demanding that they turn over customer personal information. Chuck, oftentimes you see these things when you sign up with a provider or at the bank that you sign your personal confidentiality and privacy statements. Have you ever read those? Because there's always a loophole somewhere for federal law enforcement or federal agencies to be able to get at your private information, usually with a warrant or a subpoena. But what's been happening, and of course this is from the U.S. District Court in San Francisco, so this is out in the Ninth Circuit, so I'm not sure if this will stand or not when it gets up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But the FBI would basically said that, well, they had the right to send these demand letters, what they call national security letters, to these institutions, the businesses, and that the businesses couldn't disclose to the customers that their personal information was being handed over to the feds. Now, it's a very, very interesting case, I think, and we have to break this down constitutionally.
Oh, absolutely. That's the only way to break it down. That's the problem here. And I see issues even with the judge's ruling.
Yeah, that's true. That's the reason why, you know, I'm a little hesitant. I think we might have a little bit of a foothold here, but it's a question of how secure the land is under the foothold. So Judge Ilston ruled that the law allowing the FBI to demand this personal information violated the First Amendment and the separation of powers, and basically told the government, you're going to have to cease and desist. You cannot issue these letters. You can't put gag orders on these companies and demand that they turn over all this private client or consumer customer information, and said that basically the government failed to show the letters and the non-disclosure policy, quote, served the compelling need of national security, and that the gag orders created too large a danger that speech is being unnecessarily restricted. Now, I think I can see where you have some concerns with the ruling, because compelling need and unnecessarily restricted are fairly loose wiggle words.
Oh, they're majorly loose wiggle words, especially when you consider the wording of the Fourth Amendment. Fourth Amendment is very clear that the actual right, the FBI has no right to go in and issue a letter and simply start taking your personal information. And the reason that right does not exist is Amendment 4.
The Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. That's right.
That's right. I'm going to read it verbatim. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, these orders violate this in probably at least three different ways that I can think of.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no particular thing to be seized or searched. They're just looking, so they can't particularly describe the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. There is an issue with this right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects, and whether or not this is a reasonable search and seizure or not. Now, a seizure, it's not, except that your records are being seized. They're being seized from another private company. So both the person whose records are being seized and the private company, their rights are also being violated because they have the duty to protect the privacy of the customer.
That's right. Now, this all stemmed, Chuck, from our old buddy, the USA Patriot Act, because that was the federal law that gave the FBI the what they consider the authority to start demanding this information from banks and telecommunication companies and other places, and to basically restrict the companies from being able to tell their customers, hey, we had to turn over your private information, including your financial records. And I'm assuming that this may extend to hospitals, to medical providers, maybe your medical records, to the government. Now, again, when this happened, a telecommunication company got upset, and they worked with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who filed this lawsuit against this portion of the Patriot Act. And, of course, Judge Ilston said, this is unconstitutional. And I also don't like the fact that you limited the court's powers to lift these gag orders. Because basically, under the law, the judges can eliminate the gag order. That is, don't tell your customers. You can't tell anybody. You can't notify anyone. That included the company couldn't even go to their attorneys and go to a court to say, we feel this is unconstitutional, because it says, quote, if you had no reason to believe that disclosure may endanger the national security of the United States, interfere with a criminal counterterrorism or counterintelligence investigation, interfere with diplomatic relations, or endanger the life or physical safety of any person. Those are the only set of thoughts that they could have to allow judges to eliminate the gag order. And so no reason to believe that it may do any of this stuff. Well, that's a pretty narrow window for a court to be able to operate under. So Ilston said that that violated the Constitution because it blocked judicial review.
Well, there's another way, and she seems to have backdoored it here. And that is, if you look at this, what's happening is that the Department of Justice is actually issuing the gag orders to the court. Now, I don't see any constitutional authority for anybody in a cabinet-level position or even in the presidency to issue a gag order for the court. There's no constitutional authority for that whatsoever. But if you look down here, she makes the statement that it's up to Congress and not the courts to tinker with the letters. That is a statement that Congress is really in charge of telling us whether we can issue the gag order or not. And that's exactly correct.
Yes, it is.
Constitutionally. But you kind of have to go the long way around the barn to figure that out from this article. But the fact is that the judge is absolutely correct. She is saying that we're under the thumb of Congress on this issue, not under the thumb of the Justice Department. And in that assumption, she's absolutely correct. Now, this is being appealed, of course, to the Ninth Circuit. And I'm not sure, I'll be quite honest, that's the most liberal court in the system. It's the West Coast court. It's, I think, California, Oregon, Hawaii, Alaska, Washington State, and I think maybe Nevada. I forget. It doesn't matter. It's the most liberal circuit in the country. And what they will rule on this is anybody's guess, because they are a mixed bag on these issues. My inkling is that the courts almost never rule in favor of restricting themselves.
No, obviously not.
And so what they're basically probably going to do is wipe out both Congress. They're going to attempt to seize power from both Congress and from the Justice Department on these gag orders. That would be my guess. Now, I'm going to also predict a knee-jerk response from conservatives who don't get the picture about what this part of the Patriot Act means. And they're going to squawk about how this means that we can no longer surveil these dangerous terrorists whose records we desperately need to see in order for the Justice Department to be able to determine who's a good guy and who's a bad guy and send people off to Guantanamo Bay. Now, I don't know what you think about that, but what I see is we're going to get knee-jerk responses all around, and nobody's going to think through constitutionally really on this except the people that we are attempting to influence, hopefully, because there is a constitutional answer here, and that is, yes, the courts can be restricted by Congress, and no, this is not a legal... this part of the Patriot Act is absolutely unconstitutional.
Well, that's exactly... Well, the whole Patriot Act, I would argue, would be unconstitutional if you broke it down into its requisite parts. But it's nice to know that, and this was, again, this was out in the U.S. District Court in California, in San Francisco, but this was also another case that was brought up in the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, who also found the gag order unconstitutional, but basically said the FBI could issue them. Now, this is gag orders to the companies to keep them from telling anybody that the government is making these inquiries, but they had to make the change. The only way the New York court would allow that to continue is if they made changes to the system to notify the recipient companies that they can ask federal judges to review the letters. So in other words, as long as you tell them they've got access to the court, it's okay to tell them they can't tell anybody, which I don't think the New York Circuit Court of Appeals made a proper constitutional ruling on this particular issue.
Not even close to a proper constitutional ruling, but again, not a big shock.
No, that's not at all.
Remember, Barry, what I think it was Madison or somebody, and I'm going to have to dig up this quote. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it memorized, but basically, you cannot make the federal government the final arbiter of its own power. And again, you can't make the federal courts the final arbiter of its own power. You can't make the federal government, period, the final arbiter of its own power. Because when that happens, that means that the federal government is going to rule that it has absolute power, as it has been doing. And that's exactly what the anti-federalists were basically screaming at the top of their lungs about. And it may be an anti-federalist who came out and made that statement. But the fact is, we're seeing the fruits of allowing the federal government to be the final judge of its own powers. And the answer is, that means the power is unlimited. We've had Congress come through on an emergency basis, and without amending the Constitution, which is a requirement for doing this, they have wiped out the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, and of course the Eighth, Ninth, and Tenth Amendments. And we're about to see the abrogation once again, this is not the first time, of the Second Amendment.
Yes.
And in many cases, we are now beginning to seriously tamper with much of the First Amendment. So I have to ask you, Barry, when are we finally going to rein in the federal government? And frankly, the only way to do it is, as we've been talking about, is to do it at the state and local level.
Yes, and that's what we're going to have to get down to. But thankfully, you've got certain businesses like this telecommunication company that just basically said, enough's enough. We're not going to take this sitting down. And they chose to try to challenge this portion of an unconstitutional law, and hopefully in the defense of their clients.
Yeah, well, let's see how this works out, because this is one of those canary in a coal mine issues. You know, there are a number of those. And if anybody listened to our show on the last Saturday, we had Pastor David Whitney, who gave a talk at Camp American, which we played that particular audio from that class. And he talked about the basis of American law, but he started out with talking about canary in a coal mine issues. And he explained what the canary in a coal mine was. You know, you took a canary down with you into the mine, and if you hit a gas pocket and you didn't realize it, and you suddenly look over and the canary's dead, you knew you'd better get out of the mine real fast, because the canary would die first because it was smaller and it respirated a lot more quickly. So they actually used them as a safeguard to tell them that they were in a deadly situation. This is one of those canary in a coal mine moments.
Yeah, but nowadays the Humane Society wouldn't allow you to abuse a canary in that way. So
that's right. But we need to use a human test subject. Well, that being said, Barry, we are out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.